Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Supplement, the show that is basically a ripoff of the Sunday Supplement. So in case you didn't know, it's journalists. They go through the big stories from that week and take a look forward to the week ahead. But we aren't going to look forward to the week ahead, okay? We're simply going to look at the five biggest stories that have happened around Chelsea this week with a fantastic journalist. And we're joined by Mr. Gary Hayes, who has his finger on the pulse when it comes to Chelsea 9 times out of 10, mainly because he does a fantastic podcast, but he doesn't like it when people say hello to him. So we're going to jump straight into it and go into the first story. And today we're going to talk first about Trevor Chalobah. Now, Chalobah, obviously, if you haven't heard, on Saturday, he's actually officially been completely cut out of the first team. No access, can't even have a shower, can't say hello to anybody. Training with the under-21s, as is Romelu Lukaku and any other players that are looking for a quick exit out of Chelsea Football Club. Amanda Breuer also amongst those training with the under-21s. Now, Gary, obviously, last year, you were very vocal about, Conor Gallagher and his relationship with Chelsea, wearing a T-shirt on the last day of the season that said, if Chelsea sell Conor, we riot. Trevor Chalobah is being treated in a similar vein. How do you feel about this? Because obviously, you know, you're massive on the culture of the club.
It's terrible, and thanks for not saying hello to me as well. It's absolutely terrible, Louis. I just think that when players do this, as we saw with Courtois, they get called a snake and they get hissed at whenever they come back to Stamford Bridge. But then there's a section of the fan base to think it's okay for the club to do this to players, and not just players who have been bought for a fee and have been mercenaries at the club. No, these are players who have been at the club since they've been 6, 7, or 8 years old, and they've been forced out. And the way they've been forced out is absolutely terrible. There's no respect being shown. There's, you know, nothing that sort of reflects what they've given the club in terms of their, you know, 20 years or so of service. You look at Conor Gallagher before we get on to Chalobah. You know, the guy was our second best player statistically last year. Now, I look at Gallagher and I understand why people don't like him, because he's not a flair player. He doesn't look good on FIFA. You can't press the middle joystick and do loads of super skills with him or do a super duper long range shot from far out and score a blinder like you can with Cole Palmer. However, he's a player that was dedicated to the club, that showed last season what he's capable of achieving. And to treat him the way they have is absolutely terrible. And to look at what they've done with Chalobah, Chalobah's success at Chelsea hasn't been, you know, on the same level as what Gallagher's been able to give. However, he has been a valuable and committed and loyal servant to Chelsea Football Club. And you shouldn't treat people this way. It's just a fundamental of business, let alone football. People that have been long-serving for your business, for your enterprise, whatever you want to call it, you just don't treat people like this. It's absolutely disgusting.
Do you think, though, so you mentioned that, and I was actually having a conversation earlier today with somebody, and I used it as an example. I mean, you spoke about business there. It was not Enzo, actually, funnily enough. It was Teams. I was talking to her about it. Teams, she was doing a space, and I had a little listen. I couldn't help but, you know that thing I do where I just like to keep talking and I can't keep my mouth shut. I did that. So I hopped in that little chat.
The way we're doing this is that I can mute you at any point.
Oh, that's fantastic. Great, Gary. I really, really appreciate that, because that's that.
I can do it now. So yeah, I can't hear anything you're saying, Louis. So keep talking, mate. Anyway. Back
yeah. No, it's very much, I think if you look at it, could you argue, I'm definitely going to play devil's advocate because I agree with everything you said, but I think it's important we give both sides and see if there's any reason why people feel it does make sense. If you look at, I guess, traditional big American business, there does seem to be a vein here where you look at the culture of how that's done, maybe stereotypically, but we've seen it happen in cases before.
Yeah, I don't care. We're not in America. No, okay. We're in the UK. And I don't care what goes on at an NFL team. I don't care what goes on in MLB or NHL. I don't care what goes on at a Fortune 500 company. I'm talking about Chelsea Football Club. And when you've got players, regardless of what they've done for the club, whether they've won the Champions League in 2021 or whether they've just been a bench warmer, that have come through the academy, you just don't treat them this way, especially players like that. You don't treat it to players that you've been, you know, that you've bought and You know, you've put money down on, then you want to get rid of them to cash in again. You just don't do it. Now, this isn't an Adrian Mutu situation where, you know, he was allegedly taking cocaine and everything else, right? Just a refresher on that from was that 2005, 2006, when the club ostracized him and forced him out and sacked him. This is players who just are deemed to be surplus to requirements. Fair enough, that happens. Look, I don't want to see this profile of player leave. But we're not debating whether these players should be leaving or what. We're debating the way the club are treating them. And you don't treat people like this. You don't force them out, make them feel subhuman. Don't allow them to use the first team dressing room anymore. Don't allow them to fraternise with their former teammates. You don't put them in this position. It's absolutely despicable. And if anything, I'm not a solicitor and I don't understand the nuances of it, but there could be grounds for unfair dismissal here, where they could potentially sue the club, right? Could they look at that? I'm not suggesting they do. My point is that if this was happening to you in your workplace, or anyone listening to this in their workplace, you know, just us mere mortals that don't have the luxury of being professional footballers, you wouldn't accept this, and you would go to HR, whatever body it is that represents you, and you'd be seeking legal advice over it. It's absolutely terrible. It's dehumanising. And you can't do this to people.
Do you think it's maybe them just covering up their tracks for a really, really poor transfer record?
Yeah, I don't doubt it for a second. You know, I look at Conor Gallagher leaving. Look, Enzo Maresca said this much in a press conference. I'm surprised more people haven't jumped on it. When I'm paraphrasing here with the question and the answer, but basically got asked, with Gallagher being sold, does that show what Chelsea's strategy is? And he said, it's not a Chelsea problem. It's a league-wide problem where the rules are set up, the regulations are there that allow us to make 100% profit on homegrown talent. So basically what he was saying is that's what we're doing with Gallagher. And it was just him. Now, I think in the comms department at Chelsea, there might have been a few people that pulled him up on that. I'm like, you've been too honest because you've sort of shown your face in the clubs, because there's no way, given the way he plays football, I know he likes to play his possession-based football and stuff, but the way he likes to retrieve the ball back, he talks about ball recovery time and everything else. There's no way he wouldn't want a player like Conor Gallagher in his team, or in his squad at least, right? I think he's just come in and the mandate has been put in front of him of Conor Gallagher has to go, and there's no two ways around it. And he's just gone, okay, well, I'll fall in line and do it. And obviously he got Dewsbury Hall anyway, right? But and it's the same with Chaloba, because yes, it's very, very clear. It doesn't take an expert to see that what they're doing is they've overspent in certain areas and now they're recouping funds back through selling off academy players. And Chaloba should not be getting sold, because outside of Levi Colwill, now that Thiago Silva's gone, I can't think of a better defender in this Chelsea team right now. You know, we bring in Toysin from Fulham. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Do you not feel that maybe, I mean, given obviously the back end of last season, Trevor Chalobah really proved his worth. And I'm everything you're saying, I completely agree with. But I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. Do you not feel that maybe in the situation that he was in last season, obviously he was injured for a significant part of it. The sporting directors obviously are kind of the people that oversee the club now. The managers, well, head coaches really are now completely sort of, you can pick him up and move him, do whatever, because that's just how modern football is now. Do you think that because they were trying to shift him onto Bayern Munich in January for £40-odd million, they've always seen him as a surplus to requirement and basically have seen it as, even though he may have performed as well as he has, he is the pure profit, and they see that maybe Tosin Adebayo is somebody who is a similar profile who can fill the quote-unquote squad rotation role in this team, rather than what it should be, which is Trevor Chalobah being the starting right centre-back next to Levi Colwill?
I have no doubt that what you said is probably what they're thinking. But then I look at Axel Disasi and I think, what? You were trying... Basically, I don't get this idea of, let's move a player there for this amount of money, but we'll bring a player in here for a similar amount of money. Just keep the player you got. Did Chelsea right now, I shudder at the thought of what this season's going to be like. I hope I'm wrong. I hope my pessimism isn't correct, because regardless of what I think about people making these decisions, I want to see Chelsea succeed, right? And I think Maresca It's not his problem. He didn't ask for Pochettino to be sacked or, you know, leave on by mutual consent. He got offered a job and he took it, and fair play to him, right? I want him to succeed, because if he succeeds, Chelsea succeed. However, I just look at what is going on at Chelsea right now, and there is no stability whatsoever. The players that do bring stability are getting moved on. And I know people got caught up in it last year. I wasn't one of them, but the booing of Mason Mount, when they did to Mason Mount what they've done this summer to Conor Gallagher with the contracts. Oh, well, we offered him a contract. He said no. Yeah, why do you think he said no? Because he knew the game. He knew the score here, in that he was getting offered this contract, not for loyalty, not because they want him to stay, just so that they can bump up his transfer value. That's why I got a lot of criticism for it. But I tweeted when the stuff came out about Gallagher and what they were doing with, oh, we offering him a contract, 2 years plus one, et cetera, et cetera. Hogwash, complete and utter tripe, what they were saying, trying to win a PR war, trying to get Chelsea fans on their side by throwing him under a bus that doesn't really exist, trying to build that bus and get the fans to drive it, right? Because what they were doing was just that they didn't want him to go for the money he's gone for, because they wanted more for him. So that's why they're offering the contract, because then the contract protects them. But not at one point did they think about his career. Not one point would they have been considering what was good for Conor Gallagher as well. And here's a player, which the crying shame about this is that, regardless of him being an academy player, and we can all talk about that and what we like, and I appreciate not everyone thinks the same as me, and they don't have to, but Conor Gallagher, if he wasn't at Chelsea, he is the type of profile that Chelsea would be dropping 60, 70 million on. Chalobah would have been bought for 40 million because he fits the profile of what they're going for. However, what they've become is commodities that bring in for the balance sheet a 100% profit. And it's just terrible. And I blame the Premier League for this. And also I look at the ownership and I look at the sporting directors and I blame them as well, because what they've done is they've completely and utterly gutted the entire culture of what Chelsea Football Club was when they bought it 2 years ago, and they've tried to replace it with something different. And we're being told that, oh, because you're fans, you should just go along with it. No. This isn't the club that I grew up supporting. And that's not because I'm 41 years old and, you know, you get these idiots on Twitter going, oh, yeah, you're an old fogey, et cetera, et cetera. No. You support Chelsea for a reason, mate, right? And it's not just about winning. We all want to see our team win, but you support for the culture that you go into and the culture that you adopt. And the culture I adopted was one of academy players always coming through. They didn't come through to the level that the class of 92 did, say. But at the same time, that Chelsea team throughout the 90s was filled with a complement, of overseas talent towards the end of the 90s and a blend of academy players that were there to bolster that squad and play supporting roles for the better players like Zola and Vialli. Carlton Cole was one of them, right? Go back to the early 90s, Eddie Newton and Frank Sinclair. You know, these guys that were coming through. Jody Morris came through in the mid-90s and played for Chelsea right through. I think he made his debut under Glenn Hoddle against Middlesbrough. I think we won 4-0 at Stamford Bridge and he made his debut. Someone will correct me on that if I'm wrong. But he played for Chelsea for another 8 years, right through to 2003 when he left to go to Leeds. You know, we've always had that culture right back through to the 60s. Now, I'm not saying I only support the club for that reason. What I'm saying, though, is that us as supporters need to look at people that are on the pitch wearing that badge and those colours for us. And I look at this team and this club right now, and that's not what I see. They've completely gutted it, and they've tried to tell us that because they're spending all this money and doing all this stuff that we've got to swallow it and we've got to like it. And I don't agree. And I'm sure if someone on this that's listening right now doesn't agree because they support Chelsea for a different reason, fine. But I'm telling you about why I support the club. And I don't support what is going on right now.
What would you say the culture is that they're trying to implement now? Because
I don't know. I look at the team that I support and I don't know what it is I'm supporting.
It's tough because I think that the whole situation, it feels like it's very much culture of all just buy your new hero.
Well, look, here's the contradiction as well, right? Is they did that last year. Because I'm completely enamoured with Cole Palmer and adore him and think he's just incredible, right? However, I want Cole Palmer to be playing alongside Reece James and Mason Mount and Conor Gallagher and Trevor Chalobah. That's what I want. Because that, and we're not just saying this because they're players that have come through the academy. They're players that won Chelsea the Champions League. Okay, Chalobah not so, but the others did. Yeah, these aren't just, oh, you just like them because they're English homegrown players. No, they're players that have delivered for this club. And they've earned the right. What do you think, Louis?
No, I agree. To an extent, I think, look, realistically, last year, I think, well, this time last year, if you'd have said to me, we're going to be selling Conor Gallagher, I would have said, well, we were going to Everton. I would have taken the money because I didn't think the quality was there. But I agree with you that, you know, last season he did prove very much that he's a player who's a roadrunner. I compared him to James Milner. And he's very much one of those players which you just need to have about who's a good professional. And I think the same goes for Trev. Now, do I think realistically, if you think about the quality that Chelsea want to be at, they're going to be the sort of players who would deliver Chelsea another Champions League? I'm not so sure. But would they be part of a Champions League? Would they be them being those sort of players? But, I mean...
Well, what we've got to look at is Chelsea nowhere near winning the Champions League. However, and look, here's the thing as well. If Chelsea were signing, you know, if they were signing a John Terry to replace Chalobah, I'd be like, okay, look, I get it, you know, because when I saw Ruben leave and he went to AC Milan, I was gutted, but it was time for Ruben to go, right? When Tomori left, I was gutted, but at the same time, we had better players around. You know, we had a Rudiger and others, right? Thiago Silva, he would have struggled to get in ahead of them as he did. But these are players that we're getting rid of and better players to replace them. Where is the logic? You know, if we were signing, let's say Van Dijk was up at Liverpool and we're like, oh, look, we're going to take a punt on him and get him in at Chelsea because, you know, we think we should bring him in and, you know, the experience, et cetera, or Thiago Silva was coming back. I'd be like, okay, look, I get it. Chalobah, I like you, mate, but there's someone better there. You look at this Chelsea team, there isn't a better man there. Maybe, like I said earlier, Colwell, maybe. You know, you look in the midfield looked more balanced, better and stronger when Enzo went and had his hernia last year and Gallagher played alongside Caicedo. There's no doubt about it. Chelsea looked better as a unit going forward. They looked a bit more solid defensively, not that they were anywhere near what we want them to be still near the end of the season. But generally, Caicedo looked more comfortable and better equipped with Gallagher alongside him than he did with Enzo. And look at it like this as well. Look, Enzo is their golden child that, you know, can get away with a lot. Now, if anything happened with Conor Gallagher this summer on a par with what happened with Enzo, there would have been a very different outcome. But the issue is with them is that Enzo's got on his deal and cost them all that money.
No, I agree. It's just the political game is just so... Look, I'm not a fan of workplace politics, never have been. And this is just it on a whole other level, which I can't even dissect. And I've got a degree in football business. So, we'll leave it there because it's going to get messy otherwise, I feel. And we'll move swiftly on. Now, Gary, you've completely messed up the flow of the whole show. I had everything ordered out, but you've moved on to another point before we could finish it. So we've done Chalobah, we've done Gallagher. Now we're going to have a little chat about Victor Osimhen. Now, according to reports this week, he is keen potentially on a move to Chelsea. However, it can't be a loan. It has to be an obligation and he doesn't want to change his wages. Now, Gary, to enlighten you even further, his wages are 10.2 million net. And Chelsea has said they're willing to potentially break their wage structure, but it has to be right. For you, is Victor Osimhen the profile of player that Chelsea need to really pretty much secure a place in the top four this season?
Well, he's a goal scorer and he's got incredible goal scoring stats. So if that's what you're asking, then yeah. Now, I don't understand the issue around his wages because it goes without saying, why should he take a wage cut to come to Chelsea?
No, he shouldn't. He definitely shouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's
just sticking to his guns and saying, look, you know what my salary is and I'm not dropping it. Is he the right profile of player, though? To be honest with you, this is what I'm saying. Look, statistically, he's got incredible stats. And, you know, he delivered Serie A to that Napoli team, not last year, the year before, right? And on a YouTube highlights reel, he looks the business. I cannot say I watch Osimhen in Serie A every week to give you a full lowdown on it. But in terms of what you hear and what you see on the fringes, he's certainly better than what Chelsea have got.
Do you think that we're looking at, I think with it as well, the deal would see Lukaku go the other way. So please. That's 50 grand off the bill every week.
Please, just send him. I'll fly the plane. Actually, no, I won't. I'll drive the car.
Yeah, so you fly on a plane. I'm not too sure about that. That would terrify me. I've been in the car with you as well. But, you know, that was okay. I just clung on for dear life down those country roads.
My Hyundai i10. We'll get Lukaku in it with all his belongings. It's like a TARDIS. And we'll get him to Vesuvius.
Oh, mate, I tell you what. That'd be a nice little trip, that. I'm up for that. Let's get that moving. I mean,
we go to Vesuvio, maybe Artie Bucco can cook us some good pasta.
Oh, you've never seen
The Sopranos, have you? So you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I have seen The Sopranos. I'm working my way through it.
Where are you? Season one, episode one, right?
I'm actually not, actually. I'm on season three now. So thank you very much. But unfortunately, I'm a very busy man, so I don't get to work watch it as much as I'd like to, because, you know, business, mate, takes priority. That's what needs to happen. And speaking of business, obviously, with that, you know, we'd see Lukaku go the other way, probably 30-odd million pounds go from Napoli into Chelsea's accounts. But then Chelsea would be lumbered with an 80-odd million pound transfer fee and about whatever 10.2 million pounds a year equates to weekly.
Do you not know that off the top of your head, Louis?
What, 10.2 million? I mean, I don't, but should we find out? Let's have a look
about,
at that.
What, 250 a week, innit?
10.2 million divided by 52 is 200 grand a week.
Well, there you go. So Sterling's on 350, innit? Reece James is on about 280. So it's actually not breaking any wage structure.
Oh, that's interesting. See, I'd never thought of it like that, because obviously they were saying they wanted to do incentivized contracts with him rather than just give him the flat 200. But I'm not going to lie, for a player of that quality, surely you give him the flat 200 straight away.
It would make sense that it's still a phenomenal amount of money, but in football terms, it's not actually that much for what he'd, or what they're expecting him to deliver. I agree with incentivized contracts. I like them. I think that is actually one good thing that the ownership has done, rather than having players on inflated salaries and just sitting there pulling it and not doing much. However, sometimes you need to bend the rules a little bit for, you know, what you've got. You know, when you look at when we're crying out for them to just buy a couple of experienced players that are ready made, you know, rather than just going in and buying a whole load of 21-year-olds that have shown a little bit of potential in the Champions League, like Mudryk, and now they're left lumbered with him because he is never doing anything at Chelsea.
You that convinced that Mudryk's not going to deliver the season? You don't feel that he maybe has an opportunity to, with a manager who really likes to use out-and-out wingers, people that are very direct?
Okay, let's see what happens. I do not see it happening. I think he is another Kai Havertz.
I mean, Kai Havertz won us a Champions League.
Oh, so he scored one goal. Okay. He's a Fugazi.
Oh, look at me. My name's Gary and I've watched The Sopranos. Ooh.
It's not actually Sopranos that they talk about. That's Donnie Brasco, actually, mate. What we're learning here, Louis, is you haven't absorbed any of this culture, so do continue.
Gary, you're the one who went into an actual Italian place and asked for a chicken parm and then got offended when they told you to fuck
off. Yeah, but I'm talking about Italian-American culture, mate.
Yeah, but it's not culture, is it? It's people that pretend to be Italian. I've been through this a million times and I will continue this. I had a full argument with... You saw me have a full argument with someone in the pub about this. I will do this till the cows come home.
I reckon that's a bonus episode, because I think everyone's going to start falling asleep. Let's get on to the Is there anything you want to add about Osimhen? Because obviously I've given my two pennies worth, but look, I think it could be a positive signing. We need a goal scorer. Where are the goal scorers right now? You know, last season, Cole Palmer made Chelsea relevant with the goals he was scoring, but there's not enough goals throughout the rest of the team. So someone like Osimhen, with the chances we create, is there to put them away. So, yeah, I don't think he would be a bad signing.
No, I agree. And I think it brings, despite his age, he's a seasoned player now. You know, he's been to Lille, he's been to Italy, you know, with Napoli, of course. You know, he's someone who's delivered at elite levels now in the top five leagues. So, you know, I'd be very keen to see him come to Chelsea. And, you know, we were talking about people that identify the club. No, he's a big Chelsea fan. So, you know, that's always a nice bonus. I know people say so is Lukaku, but I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. But Victor Osimhen, for me, I think, yeah, he'd just be a guaranteed number of goals for us this season. Someone who's less maybe considered that, but has come as Chelsea's Samuel Mordion from Atletico Madrid. Now, of course, he's that's pretty much done. Obviously, same price as we received for Conor Gallagher, so it's tantamount to a swap deal. One good season.
He got seven goals, didn't he?
So I take it you're not particularly keen on the signing of Samuel Mordion.
I don't understand what we're getting. But this is the point, is that I look at what's in the team now and in the squad of, what is it, we've got 45 players? And I look at it and I think, yeah, well, what are you going for here? What is it you're getting that you haven't already got? And that's my point, is I'm not putting a downer on him. Because look, any player that comes to the club, you've got to give them an opportunity to prove themselves. You can't just be down on them saying that, you know, they're tripe, they're not going to do anything. You've got to give them a chance, right? And you don't want them coming into a negative environment, you know, in terms of fans thinking certain things about them, et cetera, et cetera. But I look at him, I think, okay, what are you giving me that Chelsea haven't already got? If he came in after one season with 30 goals, great. But what is he giving that Chelsea haven't already got? You sign players to strengthen your squad.
Do you want to know something really funny?
Please, I'm so depressed. I need to laugh because, as you can probably hear as I'm chatting here, I'm incredibly down, and the season starts next week, and Reece James is injured again.
Yeah, no, I was going to touch on that at the end.
Okay, I'm ruining your script. Go on. What's funny? What's funny?
Shut up. Let me do it. With the Samuel Mordion signing, if Chelsea bring in Victor Osimhen, either one of him, I Samuel Mordion, or Mark Gouy are going to go out on loan.
And Gouy,
both the summer. Yeah.
And Gouy looked okay in pre-season. I liked his goal against the Finnish Club America, where he got across the keeper, attacked it, got the header, you know. But he's a young, raw player. But then suddenly what you've got is you've got two young, raw goal scorers. It just doesn't add up. You're meant to have stage, you know, it's staggered, you know. So you've got your out-and-out goal scorer that's playing every week to scoring your goals. And then below him is a guy who is maybe more experienced, but at the end of his career, who can come in and score goals, or is the guy on the way up who has got the ability to score some goals. And below him, you've got the really raw guy that just needs a few chances here and there, right? So to put it into Man City context, you had Haaland, Alvarez, and then Oscar Bob, right? Chelsea don't have that structure. Chelsea just have no Haaland, no Alvarez, just Oscar Bob, and they're expecting him to score 25 goals and get him into the top four and win the FA Cup and win the League Cup and win the Conference League as well. It's like, are you serious? Because they're on a hide into none already.
I mean, I've been banging that drum for about a year. I think it's just completely logical. I don't understand the mentality of, we're going to sign players that are raw but expect instant results, but then asking everyone else to be patient when they're not getting the instant results because they want this. It's a cycle. I don't understand how Todd Boehly, Ben Agbaji, the board, put out that statement when they brought in Paul Winstanley, Lawrence Stewart, Christopher Vivell less so, because, you know, he clearly saw what the dumpster fire was going on and just kind of went, nah, I'm going to head off to Manchester United, and he's probably going to do very well there by the looks of things with the signings there, mate. They said that we had the best in class. If it is the best in class for teams of Brighton's standard, then absolutely. But if you want to actually have the best in class in place, I've not seen anything which comes close to showcasing that. Because when it comes to the big deals, Bowley and Egbali have had to step in to polish those off. You know, Moises Caicedo was a prime example of that last summer. Enzo Fernandez, exactly the same. When it came to the big money signings, the people who are supposed to be in charge of transfers have failed to deliver. So, you know, they've said they wanted four windows. This is the fourth window. We just got to see what happens now. I've got really got excitement going into the season. It's more trepidation. We'll touch on that at the end. I don't want to get your thoughts on the season ahead right at the end. But before we do get into that, let's talk about one big positive when I've said that they failed to do certain things. The signing of Pedro Neto came out of nowhere on Friday. Absolutely just appeared. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think that is a player who does add significant quality, don't you think?
Before I knew it was going ahead, I got a text message from my mate Dan, who's a Wolves fan. And when I saw it, I was like, okay, Neto, good player, exciting talent. But then it was the tone of Dan's message that I was like, yep, here we go again. When he said, if he stays fit, you've got a player on your hands. And then when you look at it, I think it's something like 17 injuries since 2017 or something like that. Again, someone listening will probably pull me up on it and say, no, it's actually 14 injuries. But the whole point is, it's a hell of a lot of injuries. And I don't understand why Chelsea have this desire to keep signing players that struggle with injury, like Neto has. Look, this isn't about Neto's ability. It's about his ability to get on the pitch and play. You know, can he do it consistently enough? Because I think as well, he's only played a maximum of 23 games a season. That's his best return on matches. So that is my concern with Neto, is not about his ability as a player. It's about his ability to stay fit.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. I think from what I heard, so we did obviously had Matt Gibb from Talking Wolves. He gave us a bit of a lowdown, and he did say exactly the same thing. He said the big, and Tom had a little look at the injury record as well, and was saying that basically the biggest worry is the fact that it wasn't just a hamstring injury over and over. It was several different types of injuries that have stopped him from playing. But when you've had multiple Wolves fans turn around and go, if it wasn't for those injuries, he'd be playing for Real Madrid, Barcelona, Manchester City, that level of club, because Chelsea are unfortunately on that level at the minute.
What does that say about Chelsea now? Oh, yeah, no. So because he's had these injuries, he can't really get there, so he needs to use you as a springboard to get there. What does that say about Chelsea? And that's happened in 2 years. That's a conversation for another time, but that is a damning indictment on the way Chelsea are perceived now.
It's something which terrifies me. But then I think, look, the Manchester City one stung a little bit. But I mean, Barcelona, Real Madrid, I kind of look at as Barcelona and Real Madrid. Those are two
When Chelsea were at their peak and at their strongest, apart from Hazard, we didn't lose players to Barcelona. We didn't lose players to Real Madrid. It's only the last 2 years that, you know, Rudiger went on a free, Christensen went on a free, and that was all because of the sanctions anyway, that we got caught up in, where they fannied around too much and didn't give those contracts up. And then by the time they could sort them out, Rudiger and Christensen, they couldn't actually give them a new deal because they were sanctioned, right? So Chelsea, really, there's an exception to the rule all the time. Hazard is that. But Chelsea kept him for as long as they wanted to and let him go when it was right for Chelsea. Chelsea didn't lose players to Real Madrid and Barcelona and bigger teams. It was very rare. You could maybe say about Robin, but Robin left because Chelsea wanted him to go. Jose didn't want him anymore. So to say that now about him in terms of what people are, oh, if he was fit enough, he'd always be, you know, he'd be the likes of Barcelona and that now. That is just a damning indictment on what Chelsea have been in the last 2 years. It's horrible to witness.
I do think we become softer in the transfer market. But, you know, again, like I said, that's a conversation for another day.
But the thing is, it's self-inflicted. Chelsea put themselves here by themselves. It's not because suddenly teams and players started looking at Chelsea and thinking, you're not as appealing anymore. Chelsea have done this to themselves. That is what is the worst bit about it.
Do you think there's any way back?
Look, we said this would be 30 minutes, Louis. It's 37. I think we'll be here for another 37 days talking about whether there's a way back.
Look, bottom line, although the injuries say one thing, Pedro Neto's record last season, especially, it showed that there is a hell of a player there. Are you excited? I mean, look, that if he stays fit, right, I get that. Let's just take that answer out. Are you excited to see Pedro Neto in a Chelsea shirt? Do you feel like this is somebody who actually does elevate this squad?
Yeah, but then here's the thing as well. It's an overload in an area where they've got so many players already. And people will say, why are you bothered about money being spent by Chelsea? It's their money, it's not your money. Yeah, I get that. However, when the money they're spending means other players in other areas are having to get sold to fill that hole, that's when I start getting, you know, more upset with what is going on and, you know, judgmental in terms of the decisions they're making, because it starts impacting the team that you're seeing. You know, I've got nothing against Neto. He is a talented player. We've seen that the way he's played against Chelsea and he scored a couple of goals against us, right? You know, but you look in, you think, well, you went out and you bought Mudryk on a whim, okay? So you got Mudryk, you got Sterling, you've got Madueke, now you've got Neto, then you've got Nkunku, Palmer, and Gui. Then you're trying to add Osimhen into this area. And I know these aren't players who all play in the same position. However, you get the point I'm making, right?
Yeah.
Chelsea's got too many players. And it's not they've got too many players that they've spent 5, 10, 12, 15 million on. It's players that they've spent north of 50 million per player. But they're not getting the return on them. And now you've got too many of those players in that area. So what's going to happen? Okay, so they signed Neto. What's happening with Mudryk? What's happening with Sterling? What's happening with Madueke? You know, one of them's got to suffer. Who's suffering?
There's two potential outgoings here. So on Saturday, it was reported that Chelsea would accept offers for around $35 million for Noni Madueke. And apparently Juventus are interested in signing Raheem Sterling from Chelsea.
Well, the point is, that's all well and good. It's a rumour. That you don't operate like that as a club when you go and sign the guy in the hope that you're going to flog the other guy. You do it where the deals are happening at the same time. So what does that say about the way they're building this squad and the contracts they're negotiating and the transfers and everything else? Again, it just feels to me like some people are being told they've got a massive budget and they can't believe it. And it's getting down to the end of the transfer window and they're starting to drop more money like councils do at the end of the financial year. Where they go, suddenly we're going to go repair all these potholes. So if we don't spend this money, our budget's going to get cut next year. And that's what it feels like. Quick, the end of the transfer window, better start spending some money again because we've got this money here, so we might as well spend it. What is going on at Chelsea does not fill me with confidence about stability, about growth, about a direction and about structure. I look at what Man City have done in the last 8 years that Guardiola has been there. And what do? They, because they've had the consistency of coach and the structure within the club, he's been, okay, he spent big in his second season when he brought in the wing-backs and everything else when he realised what he had to do in England. But since then, they've spent big in some windows, but they haven't bought en masse. They just bought a couple of players here and there. Chelsea are buying entire squads every transfer window. And they continue doing it. And it feeds the social media mob that all they care about is the next thing. What about what you've got? You know, they signed Petrovic last summer. And now suddenly Petrovic is going. We've got 9 keepers at the club. It's like 9 goalkeepers. It's embarrassing. How can you get 9 keepers and force them into your squad? It's terrible mismanagement. And you look at the squad that Maresca's working with, and he's talking about, you know, what we always hear about, you know, he has to sit down and work with the players and talk to them about, you know, show them what he wants, and it takes time for them to adopt it and everything else. Well, there might not be 45 players in his matchday squad. He might only want to work with 25. However, he's got another 20 players that he might need to use at some point. So he needs to bring them all in. How is he getting that message over to 45 players, whatever the number is? It's making his job harder. Now, a squad of 25 is a healthy number because it's almost 2 players for every position. But when you start going beyond it, it makes the coach's job harder because he needs to know that when Moreira is available to play, because he has some injuries in places that Moreira just slots in and does what he's meant to do. But how is he meant to work with Moreira or Ugochukwu and work with these type of players that aren't even on the fringes? They're beneath the fringes. See what I mean? So here's my issue with Neto is that really they should have, if they were looking to move Madueke on, we'll have the deal set up so that when Neto comes in, they happen in tandem. But now what we're talking about here, Louis, is rumour. We don't know how much interest there is in Madueke. Who is it you said were interested in him?
No one. There's not actually any solid people saying that they're interested. But I think Chelsea were saying that it sets off as around 35 million. And then there's concrete interest from Juventus.
Because here's the thing as well, what I was going to say is, just quickly, just thinking of numbers as well. I forgot Nicholas Jackson. Now, I know he played as an out-and-out forward at times last year, but then towards the end of the season, he was playing more on the left. So suddenly what you've got there is, you've got Jackson, Mudryk, Neto, Sterling, Madueke, just in inside forward positions. Whether it's left or right isn't important, but you've got five players vying for two positions. But then in the centre, I'm assuming it's going to be Nkunku. And then you've got Palmer behind them as well. So suddenly you've got seven or eight players going for three positions. It's way too overloaded.
I mean, I kind of understand why they've done it because of all the injuries we had last season. But then again, like you said, it's too many people.
Okay, all the injuries we had last season. So we're going to sign a player that was injured a lot last season.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get the best out of him because he won't be playing as much, mate. That's the only... I'm trying to find positives, Gary, all right? I'm trying to be more positive. That's what my therapist told me to do. I need to stop being so moany and I just need to be more positive. Maybe you should do the same.
I'm talking to you here just trying to rationalise it myself and I hope I'm wrong. I hope that in 2 weeks' time things are looking so good and people have listened to this and they come and tweet me and go, you were talking to cobblers. Great, I hope I am. It just doesn't fill me with confidence right now. And like you said, they asked for four windows and here we are in the fourth window and you're looking and you're thinking, it doesn't look any different to the first window.
Well, we'll have to see. But on that, let's just wrap it up quickly. Gary, I need a prediction from you for Chelsea this season. Where do you think Chelsea are going to finish?
Seventh.
Oof, that's harrowing. That's Enzo Maresca calling you straight away.
It wasn't actually. It was Todd Bowley.
Why are you saying that?
So what's that? No, I don't want a sport director's job. Let someone else take it and clean it up, then I'll take it after. Thanks, bye.
I'm just saying, me and the score would be unbelievable sporting directors for Chelsea. My talent ID is through the roof, mate. I've got some Lithuanian winger, right? Plays great on a Sunday. I reckon he'd be better than Mykhailo Mudryk. I'll stick him on the left-hand side.
Well, straight away, you're sacked, Louis. I'd be like, Louis, why are you buying players? We've got too many. Work with what you got.
No, because it'll be fine because I'd have already shifted on two players and then replaced them with one.
Wow.
Ah, see? I've outthought you there. Don't worry, there'll be two players at the door, one in.
Yeah, okay. Well, don't sign your Lithuanian until you've got them out the door.
That's fine. No worries. I get that sorted. Ed's going to have to wait. So you're going seventh this season.
Seventh.
And do you think Enzo Maresca is going to be given the year to do what he needs to do, or do you think he's going to?
My concern with Maresca is that, again, look, he's had one season as a manager, which was with Leicester, and he got promoted and they won the league in so doing as well, right? So you have to give him credit where it's due. However, my concern is with the style of football he plays is that he becomes Maurizio Sarri Mark II. And we know how that went because that style of football isn't Chelsea football. It's not what we like as a fan base. We don't want to see it. We want to be seen as Chelsea and we want someone to play how we like Chelsea teams to play, which is high intensity football, on the counter, in your face, up and at them. And you can do that with finesse as well. And Conte did that with finesse. Ancelotti did it with finesse. And Jose 1.0 did it with finesse. And Lampard did it to a lesser degree in 1920 when he had the transfer ban and got us into the top four. The managers, and Tuchel as well, when he was in the first 6 months and he went a bit more
rigid and a bit more one-dimensional and boring. But the managers that Chelsea fans like and the managers that do that, and I'm worried that Maresca isn't going to be that guy. And we're being told that we should be embarrassed with the way we've won trophies in the last 20 years. We should be embarrassed by this, this and this and this, because we've got this whole new style and approach that is basically going to make Chelsea bigger and better. It didn't work under Sarri. And my concern is that Maresca isn't just like for like with Sarri, but there's similarities. And I'm worried that that's what it becomes. And when it, if it does become that and results aren't going his way, the fan base is going to turn on him in pretty quick.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. You're not going to get what I predict because I'm saving that for my pre-season preview, which I'm recording.
Oh, thank you.
On Monday. It's all right. No worries, mate. This show's all about you. That's why you're here. So I appreciate you coming on. Guys, if you want to go find out more from Gary, he's on Twitter every so often. He's kind of like a house cat. You know, he just kind of comes and goes as he pleases, like taps the side of the bowl, i.e. Twitter. So then sort of be like, yeah, I've got something to say. Then he runs away. So yeah, if you want to go see what Gary's got to say, make sure you do that. But more importantly, if you want to see more of all the great stuff that Gary does, make sure you listen to The Blueprint if you haven't done it yet. And also check out The Sideline because there's a lot of stuff on there from myself included. Daniel Childs, some other great Chelsea journalists and people associated to the club's content, which you really should go and check out. But this has been The Chelsea Echo. This has been The Chelsea Supplement. Big thank you to Mr. Gary Hayes for coming on. Make sure you give us a 5-star review and listen to us on all good podcasts and platforms. Deezer, Spotify, SoundCloud, Napster, if that's still a thing, and Apple Podcasts. So, yeah, guys, if you haven't enjoyed
it, take it.
Not Apple Music. No, thank you for reminding me, Gary. Thank you very much for listening, guys. And we will see you back for 5 and 5 on Monday.